This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This program contains themes of an adult nature. Word for Word is an in-depth look into the lives of real people, which means this episode may contain explicit accounts of real-life events, including alcohol and drug use. The language used at times may cause some offence, but has been left uncensored due to the accuracy of the story. No offence is intended, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community stations around the nation, this is Word for Word. Coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome, family and friends, fans and fiends, to today's edition of Word for Word. I want to thank you for tuning in today. I'm Benjamin Norris, and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week, we will chat with those in and around the community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. Today's guest is one of them. This man is a very recognisable voice and name amongst the queer community, especially on this channel, as he is the founder of Joy, the very radio station you're listening to now. From an early age, he recognised a passion for radio broadcasting and went on to work at RPPFM as a breakfast announcer in Port Phillip. Then after a short break, he found his way back on air with Southern FM, which is where he realised the importance of creating a space for LGBTI voices on radio. His passion for the community as a gay man led him to start Australia's first LGBTI community radio station, Joy, where he cultivated a sound that has been inclusive and powerful. And with a creative streak so powerful, he inspired those around him to listen, follow, and enjoy a radio network that is still popular 25 years later. In a world where ambition and playing fair is hard to do, I'd like to welcome you and welcome John Oliver to Word for Word.
So you're a Melbourne boy through and through.
Mm-hmm. My father passed away when I was a very young child.
Because he's the man who started this radio station, he's our member number one and our founder, John Oliver.
I like songs that are a little bit cheery and lyricky and a little bit different, like a lot of things in my life.
So you just decided, that's it, we're going to set up our own radio station. We'll tell them.
Yeah, and also I actually felt that it was important that we were able to get out there and have a voice for the gay and lesbian community at the time, which is now LGBTI community.
This station has been such an important factor in so many people's lives.
You have resigned from really talking about any of this. It would feel like not asking Greg Brady about the Brady Bunch.
I've always stood for the truth. I try to find out the truth.
What Joy did was that it actually provided a bit of a lifeline for a whole lot of people out there.
When it first came across your desk and there was a Save Joy campaign, did they ask you to sign something?
What did I tell you? I don't want to have any more to do with it. For me, I'm out. Joy, J-O-Y, is the most important thing of this organisation.
Hi, how are you, Ben? Hi, everyone.
Do you know what's interesting about this is that getting you to come in here, I kind of feel really nervous because...
Why?
Well, you're the godfather of this radio show. Is it weird to come and sit in?
It's a nice feeling, isn't it, for me? But I actually look at it as one of these things that, you know, it had to happen.
It did?
Yeah.
I was going to say, should we have a cup of coffee and get going? Which is originally the first words actually said on Joy.
That's right.
Which was said by you.
Yes, that's right. And then we played Kylie. Celebration.
Was it Kylie Minogue?
Yes, Kylie Minogue was the official opening song with Celebration.
Wow. Mm. And then you look at Kylie's career and it's still going strong.
Yes, so is Joy.
Yeah, exactly.
Funny thing about that, isn't it?
Well, I think it was only a couple of years ago that she celebrated 25 years of being, you know, as successful as she has been. And then you look at us, 25 years in.
That's right. We're going well, and I think we're going to go a lot longer than what we all anticipated.
Because
Joy's been around now for 25 years, and I love it. It's my most favourite baby.
What was your reason for starting Joy?
My reason for starting Joy was to actually be actually get the word out about LGBTI community as a whole. Also to get like Midsummer and different other organisations, the word out about them and what they do for the community. And also our sponsors for local small businesses and businesses to do with the gay and lesbian community to be able to put some advertising or sponsorship on air. And I thought it was very, very important to be able to do all that, plus many, many other things. We'll most certainly cover it over the next hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you ever think it was going to become so important to so many people?
I didn't have a real clear idea how it would go.
Yeah.
When we originally set up Joy, we were looking at the idea of it in a building that was very secure, a big gate in the front, so no one could get in, we could keep them out, but we never ever had to use it. It was quite good. It was great. It's been great ever since. We've never really had any violence towards Joy. It's always been accepted, and I think it's very, very important.
I think it's interesting that you say that, because so often do you have people thinking that they're going to have a problem with the fact that you are, well, for me, I'm a gay man, and I remember even doing Big Brother. There was a lot of parents at home because it was a PG show, and they were like, oh, Ben's gay on this show. What am I going to say to my kids when they ask me? You know, they think that there's going to be this reaction, that it could be negative. But with kids, their response was, you know,
don't care.
They don't care. You know, love is love. I mean, they don't really notice. They go, well, can we have carrots for dinner after they find out about it? Because it means nothing. But so often do we think that we're going to be met with some negativity, and it's not there.
I know. That was one of the things that several people said to me at the time. But I never had very much negativity in my whole life, really, as far as the gay side of it. I only remember when I was about 17, I had these guys on a tram said, oh, look at the poofter. And I thought to myself, up yours. And I got off and went and did what I had to do. But, I mean, so that was never anything that ever worried me.
Well, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves because we are going to go back and talk about you and talk about you as a child. So you grew up in Coburg, is that right?
You've done your homework, haven't you? Yes, I was born in Coburg. I grew up in Coburg until I was around about 16. Mum decided to build a house in Pasco Vale South, which we moved there. And that's when I started to get a little bit interested in radio prior and just on that time of being 16.
What was your childhood like?
My childhood life was an interesting life. I was born in 1947. I grew up with an older brother and sibling, and when my younger brother came along, that was 7 years later. And what actually happened that my father actually had a full stroke. All his left side affected him, and that was 6 months after Russell was born, and he lived for another 3 years. I was very close to my father. I found my father when he had the stroke in the bathroom, and I went through quite a bit of stress through all of that as well. And then after that, I used to sit with Dad when I come home from school, and we used to sort of chat. I used to talk to him, and he tried to talk to me. And one day I was sitting there, and he moved his leg because he couldn't move his left leg. And I was really quite excited about it at the time, and I said, gee, you're getting well. This is great. So that was one big stage in his life, but he could never speak any words any further. But I actually was always around him. I remember the day when he went off to hospital and he never come back. The dog stood beside him, and he went off to hospital, and 2 weeks later he passed away.
What impact did that have on you as an 11-year-old?
Right up until about 15 years ago, it still had an impact on me. I never could cope with my father leaving me. But I became quite patient as I got a bit older and realised what was going on, and I accepted it.
You had this powerful relationship with your father. What was it that he taught you?
To love people and show people that you love them and you support them. And that's one of the things that I've always tried to keep to do with people generally.
even till now.
Right until now.
It's such a powerful message, though. Mm. You know, I think more people need to live their lives like that, because I think sometimes people look for the drama when it's unnecessary, when they could just look to be happy.
Yeah, well, I don't like drama at all. I must say that. I found it to be very stressful when there was drama.
Mm.
I'd have had plenty of drama with that, mm. with my father at that stage. And then later in my life, that I got a bit older and I decided that I'd had enough.
What was your relationship like with your siblings? Because you had your two siblings. What sort of a role did you play with them?
I was the middle boy. My younger brother, I used to look out for him and make sure he was okay. My older brother used to be a bit of a bossy bastard, so I used to sort of give him his bit of lip back, you know. But I knew there was something different about me. I knew that. It's one of those things that we all sort of realise, I think, as we get, as we're getting older, and you look back on photos as a kid and you say, oh, God, you're a queen, you know, screaming little queen. And that was in the 40s, 50s. So, you know, it wasn't out.
You weren't, no way.
No way. And I didn't realise what was going on with me at that stage. So it was just one of those things that I think that as I was growing up, I realised a few other things that happened in my life.
What was your relationship like with your mum growing up?
Oh, fabulous. Mum and I got along really, really well. When I actually came out, that was a different story, but Mum and I were very close. We got along extremely well. I would do things with her and help her do the garden. I'd help her cook. I'd help her do housework. I'd help her do anything. And she did appreciate it. And she said, I don't want you to be doing this all the time. I want you to do something else.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'd like to go and learn how to be on radio. So she took me, she found out a bit of information and she took me into 3XY at the time in Carlton and met with the manager there, and he suggested I go to Lee Murray's radio school. So we went there and we did a bit of training and all that sort of thing with Lee Murray, and it was quite exciting, actually.
Where do you reckon that that passion came from? Because, like, was it your mum listening to radio or your dad listening to radio? Like, where did this passion to do radio come from?
I'm quite sure. I don't know. It just came. It was always there. It always hung around. It was always something there that was, I had to be involved with radio in some way, shape or form. And, well, as I grew older and as I got older, I realised it was community radio to be involved with.
That was the passion.
Yes, well, I didn't go into commercial radio because of certain things that did happen with me.
What were those hurdles?
One of the hurdles was I had a lot of throat problems when I had my tonsils out when I was a kid. They did some damage with my throat and it caused my voice box to be not quite right. So it actually stopped me from doing it. And I had a problem with reading, with dyslexia. So I can read backwards really good. I'm fabulous at reading backwards.
Did you know at the time that you had dyslexia as a kid?
No, they didn't know about that sort of thing.
Because I always think that's really interesting, because you look at kids these days, they're so quick to be able to detect that stuff and how they can continue to educate you, you know, knowing that that's, you know, the learning disability, I guess, that you have. I had a very similar thing where my reading was just terrible, but I still worked out ways to sort of get around that. What state school did you go to?
Coburg State School.
Yeah. Did you make a lot of friends there?
Yes, sort of. I wasn't a person who would go out and mix with other people a lot, but I did make friends with certain people, and some of those boys from the tech school when I went to Coburg Tech actually came in and visited me at Joy down at South Melbourne. There's about eight of them. They came in and said hi to me, so that was interesting.
Were they impressed to see what you were doing at Joy?
Yes, they were, and they were all gay.
Well, there's a lot of us. I mean, if they're going to come into Joy and check out what you've been doing, I'm going to say that that's usually the common theme. While you were going through school, I mean, for me personally, I had my awkward years. Did you have your awkward teenage years?
Oh, yes, I think everyone has them. I think everyone goes through awkward teenage years at some stage in their life. I mean, they say even if it's at 32, they have that awkward stage, especially if you're coming out.
Well, how old were you when you worked out your sexuality?
16.
What was your first interaction with homosexuality? Like, when did you first become aware of that?
Well, I knew that I was attracted to men. I used to look at men more than women.
Mm.
I used to find that, you know, different things happened in my life when I was growing up as a younger person, that I was molested by an older man, friend of the family, and I was very nervous about all this sort of thing. I thought, is this right? Is this wrong? But as I grew older, I used to go to religious studies, and I would be waiting to catch the bus to go home, and I used to wonder why these men used to pull up in the car and say, do you want a lift?
Really?
Yes, yes.
But yes. Do you think, was that happening because they could work out your sexuality, do you think, before you did?
Yes, yes. It showed very much so.
Yeah, yes. But I mean, yes. It definitely put you also in a dangerous place as
well.
Yes,
it did. At that stage, I realised that it was dangerous, and I was very careful, starting to be very careful at that stage, because I'd had that past experience.
Mm.
So I realised that that was there and it was happening around me, so I thought to myself, something is definitely going on. So I eventually met someone who I knew this particular person,
mm.
and I was speaking to him about it, and he did sort of explain a lot to me at the time.
And was that when you've then felt comfortable to tell your mum that you were gay?
No, that's another story on its own.
I'm getting ahead of myself. I mean, it's fascinating to hear all of this.
Mm.
Interestingly enough as well, it's a generational change as well. Like, you know, what it was like back then for you is different to what it was like for me.
It's a breeze now.
Well, yeah, you kind of look at it now. Mm. I mean, it's more that there's information out there, but it's also that there is a lot more tolerance. I think at that stage that you started to feel comfortable about your sexuality to a point to tell your mum, what was her response to that?
Well, I'll tell the story in full because I think it's important.
Yeah.
My mother got married.
Right.
And I had a stepbrother and a stepsister, but a stepbrother.
So like Brady Bunch or the Partridge Family.
Yeah, yes, a bit like that. And I didn't hide my gayness from anybody
in
general. And he came to me and he said, oh, are you gay? And I said, yeah, I didn't hide it. There's no use hiding it. And I didn't think any more of it. But he went to his father and said, John's gay.
Mm.
I don't want to be anywhere near him. So... But he just did that for something to get attention, I think, because I had no intentions of going anywhere near him or anything to do with him. And my stepfather told me that I had to either leave the state or leave home, which was my home, my mother's home, and he'd moved in, that I had to leave and or tell my mother. So I turned around and I had a bit of a think about it and I thought, no, he's not going to tell me what to do, you know, sort of thing. So I turned around and I told my mother, and of course there was lots of tears and a lot of upset and how could you do this? How could you accept this? You're going to a psychiatrist. You're going to get this sorted out. Blah, 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 blah. All
pray
that
the gay away.
Yeah, all the gay away. And so I went along with it all and I sat down with the psychiatrist and I just said to him, I said, who are you kidding? I'm gay and there's nothing more you can do about it. You know, I don't think there's anything can be done. And he said, yes, you're right.
And did that psychologist at that point, did he feel comfortable to not pursue any kind of ongoing treatment for you?
Yeah, no, he agreed with me that it was,
yeah, right.
You know, it was, you know, I accepted it and I was happy with it and he accepted me being gay. He knew that just nothing could be done.
It certainly does leave your mum in a hard place, though, I think. You know, obviously she's struggling with your sexuality, but she's also struggling with what her current husband was feeling. How did she cope with that?
Well, she turned around and she said to me, I'm going to leave Harry.
She was going to leave her husband.
Yes, and because of me. And I turned around and said, no, you're not. You're not doing that. Because all these years she'd had struggled since my father died.
Yeah.
A lot of dramas and different things that happened in our lives. And I just said, no, you're not. I'll leave. I said, I'll go out. It's time for me to go out, move on. I was 20. I decided to go out and move out on my own and be with a boyfriend that I'd met. We actually decided that we move in together and live together.
What was his name?
Barry.
This was your first boyfriend,
yes,
Barry.
Yes, first boyfriend.
How long did you end up being with Barry for?
10 years.
Yeah, it didn't end that well, but we'll get into that, won't we?
Yeah, if you want it. I mean, there was a bit of drama with Barry. She was a bit of a drama queen, but never mind.
Is that why you're allergic to drama as well?
Oh, yes.
When you think of drama, you think of Barry, and you think, I'm not going there.
Just not that. There's been a lot of little dramas in my life. We lived together for 10 years. 6 of those years were quite good, but the rest wasn't.
What was wrong with him?
He liked the drugs a little bit. He smoked the dope a bit, and he liked young lads.
Okay.
And that wasn't my scene, and I just didn't tolerate it any longer.
Was he older than you?
Yes, he was 2 years older than me.
Right.
And I ended up selling the flat and moving on, and he moved on in his way and never spoke to me again.
Do you know what ever happened to Barry?
Yes, he died around about 20 years ago with HIV/AIDS.
Oh. See, that's the other thing is that yesterday I was sitting around with a group of my friends and, you know, we're all gay men. We've all been friends now for 10 years. And you think about what luxury we have now, not having to have gone through that. The AIDS virus really did affect different generations, especially your generations. Was that a hard thing to go through?
Yes, I lost a lot of close friends over the early years, and more recently I lost another friend recently. But I mean, say, it was quite disastrous for all concerned, and that actually made me realise that we had to get the word out as far as HIV was concerned for the community, and that's one of the reasons for Joy being born. Because it was really, really important that we got a message out there about HIV and the doctors on air and people talking about medication and what to do and what not to do and to be careful. And I think that was one of the major things when we first started Joy that we were on about. And I think we still should cover that on a weekly or second weekly basis.
I think what's interesting as well is how accessible some information is these days for younger people, for them to access this sort of stuff. Like even sitting here and having this conversation, you think of younger people being able to hear your stories and you think, well, there was nothing like Joy for that, for you back then.
No.
There was no way to sort of access that information and find out more about, well, lots of things beyond AIDS, but like lots of other things that are common amongst our community.
Yeah. I mean, so I remember walking down the aisle at the hospital over at Fairfield to visit a friend who was dying. And I went over there and visited him every second day. And you'd see young men in their 20s walking down the aisle towards you, looking like they were around about 80. And that was something that really was an eye-opener. And that would make anyone realise at the time that something's got to be done about this horrible, horrible whole disease.
If you could go back and have a conversation with John Oliver yourself as a 12-year-old, what advice would you give that person? What advice would you give yourself?
Be honest with yourself. Be open with yourself. And look out for others at all times.
What would you say has been the biggest career highlight for you so far?
Joy.
This. Is it still amazing to come and sit in here and feel as though that you started this? That must be powerful.
I don't look at it like as if, you know, I started it. I look at it as that all you guys and all you girls and everybody who's been involved, the volunteers, everyone who's been involved with Joy, they did it.
Yeah.
I just had the initial idea to start it. Being in areas, you have a tendency to get up and get things going and say, right, you lot, get in there and get it going, you know.
You're being so humble about this.
But I've always been like that. I've always accepted that, you know, Joy is part of the community. It's not my joy, but in my own little heart, it is my joy. But to everyone else, it's Joy and it's for everyone to enjoy.
Exactly. You have seamlessly been able to make people feel inspired and to follow your voice. And that's what they have done. Are you aware of that power that you have?
No, but I try to help people as much as I can. I, you know, at different times things have happened where people think that I'm doing the wrong thing. Mm. I've had that happen many times in all my life. But I've always tried to do the right thing by everybody. And that's something like that is very, very hard to do. And I've always tried to put the message out to everyone, come on, let's get on with it and let's enjoy ourselves. And that's with joy, you've got to have a lot of fun at the same time as being serious. You have a serious job to do, like being interviewed today and going and doing certain things around the station. But the bottom line is you have got to have a bit of fun in life. And I think that's with any job or any position you hold.
I think that's important for people to realise that, you know, they have to enjoy what it is that they're doing or you become jaded and you should get out.
That's right. Because when you become jaded, it's time to get out.
It's time to go. It's
time to take a lesson and step back and say, right, get on with something else. Do something else in your life.
So much of these philosophies that you're talking about today, you know, goes back to your father and your mum.
Mm.
And I think it's so powerful that your parents have instilled such important ideas on how to live your life.
Mm.
What happened? Because you went to radio school and you did a bit of that, but then you sort of took a break from radio school and then you became like an interior designer. You went into that and then you went into Safeway, which then became Woolworths. Why did you take a step back from the passion of radio?
I had experiences with the radio school that I didn't like at the time. Lee Murray was fine, but there was other people involved with training that I took a bit of a dislike to, and he took liberties that he shouldn't have took, and I didn't feel comfortable about it. And
what do you mean by that?
Physical liberties.
Oh, really?
And I just didn't like it, and I had to walk away because I was with Barry, and I told the person at the time I was with someone, and
they didn't respect that.
They didn't respect it. Anyway, I decided to walk away because of that and also to be with Barry as my partner. So it was sort of one of those things that I decided that I wanted to move on in my life and I might have had to give radio a rest. So I gave radio a bit of a rest and that was over that 10-year period.
To this day, when you hear stories like that, it makes me so frustrated because you have such a thirst and such a passion for radio and you were heading on the right path with this career and then you've walked by circumstance and coincidence into someone who did the wrong thing by you and that put you on a different path. Even those sliding doors things, you know, take a different path.
Mm.
Do you look back with any regrets on any of that?
No, not really. And when I look back at the big picture, and now at 71, I look at it, that had to happen because community radio was only in infancy at that stage, in the middle of that. I went to 3CR when they were building the studios and setting it up and setting the transmitter up in Malvern.
Mm.
But I didn't get involved with it because I didn't feel comfortable in there. It was just one of those things. You either feel comfortable or you don't.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel comfortable. But I remember going into 3CR and seeing what they were doing at the time.
How did you then end up getting your mojo back and wanting to go back to community radio? I think it was Radio Port Phillip, which is where you went. And that was your first trip back into that industry.
Yep.
What led you to that point?
Well, what happened, we built a house down at Frankston. I organised to have a house built, bought the land and all that stuff. After leaving Mirralbark, couldn't get out of it quick enough. But that's Mirralbark.
Yeah.
We built the house and had it all done, got all the garden done. I did all that and I thought, oh, what am I going to do now? This is it. And then 3RPP was broadcasting down there and I thought, oh, I think I'll get involved with community radio. This is one of the things I could do. So I'd go down there and I'd introduce myself, become a member and got involved and was working in production and sales and different other things. I had been on air doing a few things and apparently the powers that be thought, oh, he's pretty good. We'll have to get him on air. So I was offered the breakfast session 5 days a week.
Wow.
So I took that on for 5 years.
What did you learn from doing breakfast radio for 5 days a week?
God, I got tired. I had to get up at 6 o'clock. And the interesting part, near the end of the years, I was getting later and later. I never used to get in there right on six. And I thought, oh, no, I think I've run me run here. I think I've had enough. So I said, no, I'm not going to do any more. And I had a little break there. I was at Southern FM, which was really a lot of fun and enjoyed myself. But I just didn't have the mojo, something wasn't quite right, you know what I mean?
I know that feeling.
Yeah, and I thought, now, something's got to give here. So I'd been thinking about going to Midsummer Carnival down at the St Kilda, and all these sort of things were on in my mind. Like, surely we can get this out and open and, you know, promote it a bit more and get it all sort of people being more aware.
Yeah, get the information out and make it more accessible.
Get it all out there. And I had a gay doctor and I spoke to him about it and he said, well, it's up to you what you want to do, but there's many things you can do. And I said, what about a gay radio station? He looked at me and said, well, that'll be interesting. I said, I've got experience in it and I think we could possibly set up a community radio station. And he said, well, why don't you? So I spoke to some friends, close friends at the time, and I said, why don't we start up a gay radio station one afternoon after finishing on Southern FM? It was actually World AIDS Day, and they weren't too happy with me doing a World AIDS Day program, but they let me do it in the end. But we had it, and I just said, I think it's about time we started our own radio station. And that's how it started.
How many people did it take for you to go over and start Joy?
About 20-odd people at the beginning.
Yeah.
First two of them were very close friends. And then it grew. I put ads in the paper. We set up the station. We're going to set it up at Paran, but yeah. That fell through. And then we found this location in South Melbourne, which worked out to be, it was only a short-term thing, but it ended up being there for years.
I have these five questions, and please don't feel you need to shorten these in any way, that I'm going to quickly throw at you. Mm. What makes a good volunteer?
Someone who's got a smiling face and a happy attitude.
Who's been your favourite volunteer over the 25 years?
I don't have favourites.
Oh, there's got to be someone. There's got to be someone. There's a voice that's been on this network that stands out. It's not playing favourites, just somebody that has resonated with you.
Philip Burt.
I got it out of you.
Mm. Well, he did play a very important part of the station.
What makes good on-air talent?
Someone who's happy and with a smiling voice and a happy voice.
Yeah, I think someone also said it's about curiosity as well. If the person who's sounding curious and investigating something, then that's quite relatable to people listening.
Oh, yeah. Mm. But still, you got to have those other three.
Why should someone work at a community radio station?
Brings them out of the shell and helps them to grow inside and makes them be more professional in their life.
Talent or tenacity? Like, when you look at it, there's a lot of people out there that have talent and that don't stand up for themselves and push themselves forward. But then there's other people with a lot of tenacity.
Mm.
What do you think works, talent or tenacity?
Talent.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important that you get out and get out of your shell and get yourself into life and be happy.
Very true. Who's working at their best game in radio right now, commercial or community? Like, who are you listening to on radio at the moment and you're thinking, this resonates with me?
I like Neil Mitchell and John Fone. I listen to both of them off and on, and I actually listen to music on a Spotify. I listen to Joy, of course. I always tune in to Joy to see who's up to what and what's going on.
What would you say is the key to connecting with an audience?
Being friendly and being yourself and showing that you care what you're doing at the time on air and showing that you have a positive outlook on life.
What challenges did you see that Joy faced over the 25 years?
Over the 25 years... it's been a struggle with money.
Mm.
It's money. It's always been money.
So not egos?
I'll get to that. But as the running of the station as JOY, it's always been money, keeping it on air, making sure everything's running technically positive, making sure that all the equipment is up to date. That is that side of joy. Now, the human side of joy as I look at, I've always said joy, J-O-Y, is the one I really care about. I care about the volunteers and I care about the employees and the sponsors. But the human element can be a bit, how can I put it, mind-bending at times.
It's an interesting way to say that, mind-bending at times, because I think individually we all have
egos.
And I've got an ego, and as much as I'd love to say that I don't.
There's an old saying, leave a bin at the bottom of the stairs and drop your ego in it and come up. And that is the way of looking at it. You look, you can come up here and you think, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to make this happen. This is how it's going to happen. That's good. But once you start putting your ego into it, saying, oh, I'm the best and I'm going to be able to do it and I'm going to make sure that I'm going to outdo everybody else, that's when it gets a bit dangerous. And when people criticise you or people have mentioned to you about a certain thing that you do, that you think, now I've got to change that, but some don't realise they've got to change in certain ways. Be prepared for change in your life. Be prepared to move on in your life and enjoy your life while you're doing it.
Change is the necessity of the beast.
Yes. And it is a beast, joy. I learnt one thing, and it goes back to 3RPP. They never, ever actually stop people from coming in and being on air on a regular basis. They said, right, that's your program, you do it. Whether those people decided to do it for 10 years, 1 year, or 6 months, or whatever. And they felt that was their time on air. That was their spot. Now, I said to the board, I said to everyone at the time, 13 weeks on and 13 weeks off. That's the way to do it. Because no one's got a particular space on air. It's their time. It's not their time. It's joy. And what goes on air at Joy is the program director, and he directs you what to do.
There's a great sense of entitlement that people afford themselves. Why do you think that exists in community radio?
Because they're a volunteer. And they're giving their time to be here.
It's personal.
It's personal. You just drop all that. You're in here because you want to be here. It's not because you think you're owed something. You're here to enjoy life, enjoy the company of all these people that you haven't met before. It's a happy crowd here at Joy.
I love working here, and I feel like that's what I see in their 25th year. I am a volunteer, and I've come in here, and I do the show, and I get out. I have the privilege of having these microphones, the systems that we have here, but I'm here to add something to the voice of Joy that I think is positive, and then I'm out.
And that's how it should be.
There was obviously some internal differences that have surfaced over the years that has surfaced recently. Is it sad to have seen any of that surface recently?
Very sad. Very disappointed.
Does that hurt you personally?
Yes, it does, actually, because I thought we'd finished with it all.
Has that surfaced before? Like, I mean, obviously people are talking about it at the moment.
Yes.
But because it was interesting, we looked at some of the headlines hitting the media with CEO Tennille about it and asked her about an explanation. While you've resigned from really talking about any of this, it would feel like not asking Greg Brady about the Brady Bunch and how you feel about all of this.
I've always stood for the truth. I try to find out the truth, but my biggest regret was that I said no initially with the present lot. I was asked several times and I said no. My health hasn't been good because I had a triple bypass 12 months ago and a few other health problems, and I just did not want to be involved in it. It's the silly same argy-bargy that goes on all the time.
When it first came across your desk and there was a Save Joy campaign, did they ask you to sign something? Was that what they were doing? Did they ask you to support a Save Joy?
They asked me to support them.
And then you decided to, instead of support them, you've ended up distancing yourself from Joy and them.
I did sign, and I did say I would support. And I said that I was still doing my homework about it. And right up until the very day that I said, no more, I'm stepping back, I still had more coming in, telling me what had been going on. And I just said, right, I'm glad I've stepped down. Because I just didn't want to be involved in it.
Yeah.
Because as I said, it's all happened before.
Yeah.
All of it. Ego. Leave your egos in the bin downstairs and come up and enjoy yourself.
Well, I think at the same time, you and I, when we talked about doing this, I said to you, I don't like to get involved in the politics. Personally, my mission statement is to come in here and enjoy Joy for what it is and then get out.
Yeah, well, the thing is, too, that you can't always do that.
Okay.
And the position that I was in the earlier days, you know, you'd listen to the stories, you'd listen to the complaints, you'd listen to the ideas of what people wanted to do. You had to take the time out to make sure that you got it straight and found out exactly what was being said.
Mm.
And what I tried to do with this present situation, that I listened to all the problems, discussions, what happened to Joe Blow and what happened to Barry. I listened to all of that, and it all come back to me as being, it's all happened before.
It's interesting, though, because like the headlines that were out for people to see in the public, so like my uncle rang me and said, oh, Ben, you're working at Joy. He's like, oh, apparently the culture in there is really bad. And I said, I'm so unaware of it. Like But do you think it's interesting that these people who've probably have left Joy are commenting on something?
Some of these people haven't left.
Yeah, right.
Some of these people think that they are very important as far as they're concerned, that they should be given extra special treatment.
Should anyone ever be given that?
No, because we all share Joy. And I tried to tell them at different times that we do share it, and that's one of those things. But I couldn't get that all their stories, all their different bits and pieces. Oh, Joe Blow said this, Joe Blow said that. If someone's going to sign, I'll sign, da-da-da-da-da. I couldn't get all the truth to the bottom of it all.
It didn't all seem to make sense.
No, it didn't make sense. Didn't make sense to me. And I just turned around and I said, look, enough's enough. For me, I'm out of it. I don't want to have any more to do with it.
Was there anything specific that happened that made you decide to distance yourself from both sides?
What did I tell you? I wasn't taking sides. And as far as I'm concerned, Joy, J-O-Y, is the most important thing, an important part of this organisation. And Joy has to stay in the position of being the top...
the top community radio station.
Top community radio station.
And that's what we need to fiercely protect.
Yeah.
That's
protect what, Joy.
That's how your partner protects you.
Yes.
And that's how we should protect our partner,
that's
which
right.
is the luxury that you've afforded us of having an LGBTI radio station.
That's right. I mean, yes, we are very lucky. And to everyone who are not happy, many, many people have been hurt, they say. Many, many people are not happy with things that have been discussed over the years. Not just the present. For God's sake, look at yourselves and take it all on and say, do I need to carry this?
Do I need to carry the burden of the drama? That's what I don't understand.
I was going to say shit, but I...
you know the laws of radio, yeah, so you know what we can't say. We can sort of bleep it out.
Yeah.
Look, I think you've handled all of that amazingly well. I get nervous even asking these questions in that way, because when I said to you about coming in here, like, I only want this particular episode to be about who you are, how this industry was... How this place is being created, and about protecting that. And I think the fact that you and I share a similar philosophy on how we protect that, and that's to step away from the drama and enjoy this community radio station for what it is.
Well, that's the only way to enjoy yourself. Why have all the drama? You don't need all the drama.
Is it sad, though, that they come to you, though, that they think, your signature's so powerful. We need your signature. We needed your signature, you know, because you're like the dad.
Yeah, the thing is, little mum, the other thing is that, you know, look, guys, I know you're listening, but the point is, though, Look at yourself. We don't need it. You don't need it in your life. Get on with it.
Totally.
For 20-odd years, I gave a lot of my life to joy. And now I've decided that, okay, I've said that I resign from joy. Now, I haven't given my life membership up. I want to state that I have not given my life membership up. I'm still listening, and I am member one. But I'm stepping away so I can enjoy Ian and I and do what we want to do, because I haven't got much more time on this earth, and I want to enjoy life. So I'm taking a break. And if you have problems with joy, or people within joy, not joy itself, take a break. Enjoy life. Go away and enjoy yourself.
What message do you have for the listeners coming up to Radiothon about re-signing?
Sign. We need the money. Simple as that. Sign because, you know, you've been listening to joy for 25 years, perhaps, some of you.
Mm.
And over those 25 years, there's been lots of drama. Oh, God, I could write a book on that. But I mean to say, don't worry about it. We're still here, and we're going to be here for another 25 years. But the point is...
Protect joy.
Protect joy and look after joy.
I think that's the clearest message that you can send out there.
That's right.
There is still original content. Mm. Our stories are being shared, and I think that a majority understands that the philosophy behind this business is sharing his stories, and it helps other people, helps the younger generation
that's
listening.
Right. Yeah, and the older generation, the people who haven't come out.
Keeps you in the know?
Yeah. But I've been to say that older people who haven't come out, who are still struggling to come out. I mean, don't forget that. There's older people who haven't come out yet.
Mm.
And they've got to come out. And they've got to learn and understand what's going on around them. And it is very, very hard, even harder for them than what the young ones do. And I know the stress for the young ones to tell their mum and dad, especially if dad's a bit, you know, butchy.
Yeah.
You've got to go ahead and tell him. But then he'll throw his arms around and love you anyway. Doesn't really matter.
What do you think Joy's going to be talking about in 25 years?
Different people's lives in the community. And how they came out, and how they found life in general. I think that's important. But, you know, Joy's always been here for our community and the community at large. And I think it's educated the mums and dads. Mm. It's educated the brothers and sisters. And I think that it's very, very important that we're still here to help people to understand what we're all about.
There's obviously different levels of satisfaction in what you have achieved. Is there something particularly special about this achievement with Joy that feels powerful to you?
I just find that the most important thing for Joy and for me is that, I suppose I'll have Joy till the day I die, but I mean to say I've always loved what all of you have done here at Joy. It's just not myself, it's the community at large, and I always had faith in the community to be able to create and make good radio. And honestly, I think that's what we're doing. We're growing, and it takes time to get into a good spot. And I think Joy is definitely growing. We're one of the biggest organisations, gay organisations in Australia. And I think that what we've done, we should be all very proud of ourselves.
Where did the name Joy come from?
Well, that was many, many years ago, 25 years ago.
We were all having a joyous time.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. I wanted Gay FM, Queer FM. What was the other one? It was another one. Anyway, and I sort of put it down. I wrote it down on my little piece of paper, and everybody at the party, at the group, wrote down their little bits and pieces at the same time, and we all come to conclusion that didn't really make sense.
Mm.
And I said, oh, well, they always have a good gay time on the movies and the old movies and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, if you're not happy about that, what about a joyful time? Call it Joy. It stands for a lot of things.
And they did.
They did.
We've been on a real journey with what sexuality means in Australia, and it's been a roller coaster ride over the last few years. Why do you think people for so many years were so scared and fearful of people's sexuality?
I myself personally, I could never work out why people were scared about it. You know, yes, we've all gone through different areas of our lives and enjoyed ourselves in different ways and not enjoyed ourselves. But as far as the sexuality is concerned, it's private, it's personal. And really, it's got nothing to do with anyone else.
Oh, I also think when people talk to me and create a profile for me, they quite often talk about my sexuality really early on. And I always want to say to people, it's like the fifth and sixth, I think, interesting thing about who I am as a person.
Mm. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's with me. I don't even worry about it.
Yeah.
I've always had the attitude that you take me as I am and that's it. And I have a lot of straight friends and a lot of great friends, and no one ever, ever questions me about it. I suppose being the joy hanging over me, they don't. Now.
No, there's a lot of respect there. What about you with your partner? How long have you been with your partner for?
35 years.
Wow. Mm. What does he think of joy?
Oh, he loves joy. He thinks there's too much argy-bargy going on. And he thinks that, you know, he doesn't want me to get upset and get hurt. And he doesn't want me to, he wants me to be more happier in my life and not have stress around me.
I love that he's fiercely protective of you like this.
I was very, very protective of me. Extremely protective.
Yeah.
And he said to me this morning, oh, I've got a headache. I don't think I can come in. I said, okay, I'll leave you home. But he's still got in the car and came with me.
Where is he?
He's out walking.
Okay.
Because he walks. And I turn around and I said to him, I said, okay, well, you know, we'll be all right. I'll be okay.
He's fiercely protective that I'm going to interrogate you today and make you emotional.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that he thinks this, though.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't want anyone to hurt me. And if anyone does, watch out.
Will you be getting married?
Yes, we are.
When are you getting married?
Hopefully October.
Where are you going to get married?
Down the peninsula somewhere.
Oh, that'd be gorgeous.
So it's not all sorted out properly yet, but we're working on it.
Is it going to be a big wedding?
No. Can't afford a big wedding.
You know, that's what I've been telling people. People are like, because I've been engaged to my partner now for 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, when are you getting married? Well, I'm like, it's not political. We just can't afford it.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. It's a bit like that, you know. I was going to say to Joy, oh, listen to me here, all you lovely people. Why don't we have a marriage on air and I'll be the people, Ian, and I'll be the
people. It's actually really good. Would you ever get married on air?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose so.
I'll come down the peninsula and put you on air. We'll do it live. What was it like over the years watching that marriage equality campaign come to the surface? Did it affect you negatively for so long?
Yes, it did.
It didn't happen.
Actually, I got quite upset about it at one stage in the middle of all the argy-bargy going on. I found that I was thinking about things that I never really thought about before. And I actually thought to myself, well, you know, if it happens, it happens. If we're able to get married, I think that's very, very important. And we should be able to get married. But I used to feel a bit low about different things that were going on, how people were being treated. That's something that I won't tolerate, anyone being walked on and damaged. I don't like that at all.
Do you feel proud to be a part of this community?
Oh, yeah. Very proud.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of you all.
I love that you say that. I don't know why. I feel like you're my father telling me that. It's such a powerful thing to hear.
Oh, I got called mother the other day.
Well, I was going to say that, but I didn't want to upset you.
I've had everything said to me, love, not just that.
What would you like to see for gay people in media? Like, what would you like to see more of?
I'd just like to see people get out there and be themselves, really. I mean, to say, by being yourself, that means whether you're gay, straight, or whatever, in your bi, trans, or whatever. I think it's important that you be yourself in being out there and showing that, you know, you're proud of who you are.
Some of the letters of the LGBTI alphabet feel like there's less, or there's not enough visibility for themselves. What advice do you have for those people?
step forward and get on with it.
Share your story.
Yeah, share your story, get on with it, and be positive in what you do, and just be really positive about what you're doing. You know, if you're bi, if you're trans or whatever, be proud of who you are.
What do you think there are? Are there any foreseeable struggles that you see for the LGBTI community?
Oh, there'll always be struggles. There'll always be a struggle of some sort. Something going on. There's always a drama queen.
It's so true. There is. It's so true. There's always a drama queen. And in any part of any community, I think there's always a drama queen.
Oh, I've seen some beauties.
It has been fantastic sitting down here and having some of this conversation with you today. Have you got a message for the queer community that's out there?
Be yourselves, be happy, and enjoy yourself.
And listen to joy. I think we just locked and loaded a very important story, which is your story, John Oliver. And I want to thank you so much for coming in here and talking so candidly. And I just want to say thank you on behalf of all the listeners from Joy.
Thank you.
And the volunteers.
Thank you.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the community radio network.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.